DW Africa Link.
It's the 25th of September. Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Njuru.
And my name is Abubakar Jalo. And remember to send your feedbacks and comments by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the program, we look at what the political impact of Uganda's Bobi Wine has been in the country. Here, we listen to him.
People power is not Bobi Wine. People power is an idea. An idea that is premised on the fact that power belongs to the people.
And we will speak to the winner, the proud winner of the United Nations Refugee Agency's Nansen Refugee Award. That will be coming up in this segment of Africa Link.
Now, these are just some of the stories that we have lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to some of these stories that are making headlines in Africa and around the world.
DW News.
My name is Ipora Nyambura with DW News. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the UN General Assembly with a stark warning of growing chaos and confusion as a rules-based global order comes under threat of breaking down. Guterres said international cooperation is becoming more difficult due to lack of trust. He was addressing over 150 world leaders attending the summit in New York.
People are feeling troubled and insecure. And trust is at a breaking point. Trust in national institutions, trust among states, trust in the rules-based global order.
The World Health Organization, WHO, is suspending part of its efforts to fight Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo after a string of attacks by militants. According to the UN Health Agency, their staff are confined to hotels and operating center in Beni for security reasons and cannot track potential new cases of Ebola. WHO's emergency response chief, Peter Salama, says that the outbreak, which has now claimed over 100 lives in a span of 2 months, could spread to neighbouring Uganda if the situation is not contained.
We also see a very concerning trend, that resistance driven by quite natural fear of this terrifying disease is starting to be exploited by local politicians, that exploitation of this very natural fear will gather momentum and make it even more difficult to root out the last cases of Ebola.
The head of the Catholic Church in Germany has apologized for its failure after a report found thousands of children were sexually abused by its clergy. According to a report released today, over 3,000 people, mainly boys under 13 years, were abused by clergy between 1946 and 2014. Cardinal Reinhard Marx said they will ensure the perpetrators are brought to justice.
As the church, we want to restore new confidence. But I hope very much that we can regain this confidence. And to make it clear, this is not about rescuing an institution.
Sweden's Prime Minister Stefan Löfven will have to step down after losing a vote of confidence in Parliament today. The anti-immigration Sweden Democrats backed the move to remove him weeks after a general election delivered a hung parliament. The parliamentary speaker will now have to start discussions with party leaders of the anti-immigration Democrats and the biggest alliance party, the Moderates, to form a new government. Finally, Croatian newspapers and websites have hailed the crowning of Luka Modric as FIFA's Footballer of the Year, but lambasted Cristiano Ronaldo for missing the ceremony. Modric was given the prize in London, the first time since 2007 that a player other than Ronaldo or Lionel Messi has picked up the top award. Brazil's Marta won the Best Female Player Award. For more news and information, head on our page, dw.com. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
If you are just joining us, you are listening to Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Eunice Njuru. Remember that we are also live on Facebook. Now, we begin today's program in Uganda, where musician turned politician Robert Sentamu Kyagulanyi, is also known as Bobi Wine, has caused a stir in the country's political landscape after appearing to lead the latest opposition campaign against President Yoweri Museveni.
Now, President Museveni, who has been in power for the last 33 years, has personally attacked Bobi Wine, accusing him of being indisciplined and arrogant. But what has been Bobi Wine's political impact in Kampala? Alex Jita with more.
Being a popular musician, Bobi Wine already has a following. But can he turn this into political capital? Maybe. He has already beaten both President Yoweri Museveni and a strong opposition figure, Kizza Besigye, in parliamentary elections, where he supported his own candidates and they won. He is leading a movement under the People Power slogan. He says his movement is not partisan.
People Power is not Bobi Wine. People Power is an idea that is premised on the fact that power belongs to the people, and that fact is guaranteed by Article number 1 of our Constitution, which states that all power belongs to the people, not some power.
So what has his impact been ever since he was elected to Parliament in a by-election in June of 2017? Dr. Frederick Goloba Mutebi is a researcher and a political scientist. Goloba believes Bobi Wine has so far been able to rejuvenate the groups that are already opposed to Museveni's rule.
Now, whether he's going to be able to take some of Museveni's supporters away from him will depend on how he goes about opposing the government and what kind of language and approach he's going to use in appealing to them. Because President Museveni's supporters support him for various reasons, some of them because he gives them money, others because they believe in the NRM as an organization, others because they believe in him as a person. Now, can Bobi Wine reverse that? I'm not sure.
President Yoweri Museveni, in the past few weeks, has been going around distributing money to groups of youths in areas where Bobi Wine has support. This made many believe government has seen Bobi Wine as a threat. But David Mafabi, who is the head of institutions at State House, disputes this.
A threat? An electoral threat? What kind of threat? I think Uganda is a democracy. People are free to organize. People have organized themselves. We have seen several pressure groups come and go. And this one, it's just like the rest.
Bobi Wine returned to Uganda last week after 2 weeks in the United States, where he had gone for treatment. Events that led to his parliamentary victory can only show that no politician has made the majority of the youth believe in themselves like Bobi Wine has been able to.
Alex Jeter in Kampala, Uganda.
And as usual, we do have your responses to this story. Chukwujindu Osakwe says, this guy will do worse. Don't forget, he is being backed by the West.
And Sidof Sese saying, keep it up. Almighty God will help you to achieve your dreams. And let's see what Ifeani Nyai is saying, very smart and honest man. Well, thank you so much for your comments. And keep them coming. Just visit our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, we go elsewhere in the world, away from Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump has given his second major speech at the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Trump said Tuesday that the United States would only give aid to countries that it regarded as allies.
Trump drew laughter at the opening of his speech when he hailed his administration's record on domestic affairs. The U.S. president also slammed global governance as he made a push for national sovereignty in his speech. DW's Alexandra von Name was there, and I asked her whether President Trump's speech was one with message of peace or something with war. Take a listen.
I mean, at least what he said was that the United States is committed to creating peace, to help other countries to prosper. So that was basically his message here. However, we also have to add that he used this speech once again, as he did in the past, to explain and to promote his America First policy, stressing that he thinks that the most important thing for his administration is to stand up for American citizens.
He did speak about U.S. Foreign aid. He said he's going to reassess that one as well. Does that mean that countries that do not bow down to the whims and caprices of the United States will not get funding?
Oh, it could be the case, because he was quite clear in his speech that the U.S. is going to support institutions, countries and projects, talking in general terms, that they see as worth supporting.
President Trump also talked about the International Criminal Court, the ICC, talking about jurisdiction here, and the ICC doesn't have control over people in the rest of the world. What kind of impact is this going to have on the work of the ICC?
Well, I think it's quite difficult at the moment to say what impact that will have. What we have to say, however, that this is a very clear position and a hard position of the United States. It was also expressed by the U.S. National Security Advisor a few weeks ago in Washington, D.C.
DW's Alexandra von Name speaking to me earlier from the UN General Assembly in New York.
Now let's come back to Africa. South Sudanese surgeon Ivan Attar Adaha, who treats people uprooted by the civil war, will receive this year's Nansen Refugee Award. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, announced on Tuesday. The internal conflict has created the world's third biggest refugee crisis, with 1.9 million people displaced within the young country.
And 2.5 million refugees have fled across South Sudan's borders. Attar operates the only functional hospital in the Upper Nile State, serving a population of about 200,000 people. So how dire is the situation in Maban, the city where his hospital is based? I put that question directly to him earlier.
Maban is obviously an isolated place, and we have about 200,000 refugees who came to the place. And when the war broke out in South Sudan, it becomes really difficult for people to get services like health services. And the situation is really so difficult. We have been actually experiencing the numbers go up, and the resources that are supposed really to be there are not really coping up with the numbers, which are really continue to increase.
You're obviously talking about a very serious situation of people who have been uprooted. Do you think the world has really neglected these people?
Yeah, it may be because people are not really seeing the real situation, which is dire in Maban. Maybe if they were to know exactly what is happening, the summary of the people, they could have really helped. Could be also the results of things are happening everywhere.
You sound very optimistic in actually being there for these people. What inspires you really to do what you do?
What inspires me, I feel better when we help. Whatever I have, I'm able. If I am able to help one person, three people, that's great for me, and I'll be happy for that.
Do you think the government in Juba actually understands the situation of these people?
As a medical doctor, I think it's necessary for me, the government, or any other person to help the situation, because we know how bad the war is. So it's really necessary. Maybe I will think of solving the problem with peace, which will give a complete solution to the whole situation, not only in Maban, but elsewhere in South Sudan and other parts of the world.
You're talking about the situation is very bad. What kind of cases that you normally often treat on a normal day?
In a normal day, of course, we have a number of things. We have to take care of the mothers who are having a labor obstruction. And we have also to see the children who have acute malnutrition. These are the things which are still common. Then we come back to the gunshot wounds from the warring parts, or even from the civilians who are also having guns.
South Sudanese surgeon Ivan Attar Adaha, who is the winner of this year's UNHCR Nansen Refugee Award, speaking to me earlier from the capital, Juba.
Now, Abu, we did post a question on our Facebook page. We were asking, how often do we celebrate these heroes? I mean, he serves more than 144,000 refugees from the Blue Nile State in neighboring Sudan. And it generated quite a number of comments. Bendazi Eduful from Ghana is saying, because most of such heroes are in deprived areas, their good works are not known by many. There are such people in every country and they deserve more.
And a quick one from Duo Zewola, pardon me there, says congrats to him. Doctors are lifesavers and should have their efforts recognized.
And Ndukana Nwazuo is saying he deserves a UN award.
Definitely. Thanks for all your responses and keep them coming here on Africa Link. If you are just joining us, a very warm welcome to you on this edition of Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru, coming to you straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we meet the pioneer of drones in Africa and talked about what he is doing to help young entrepreneurs build their business with the help of drone technology.
African Drone is an organization that's a nonprofit and that empowers African drone pilots, journalists, and anyone who's interested in using drones to see the world around them in a different way. So we say drones for good.
That story coming up shortly. And we'll also hear how Czech Republic is refusing to provide refuge for Syrian orphans in our Focus on Europe segment. But first, we head to Ghana, where a two-day national policy summit is underway in Tamale. It is aimed at assessing government flagship programs since Nana Akufo-Addo became president of Ghana.
The summit ends today, on September 25th. Policies like the One Village, One Dam, Free Secondary Education, One District, One Factory, Planting for Food and Jobs, among others, appeared good on paper, but due to political interference, their impact has not been felt. Critics say the country's current government has rushed into things. Here is Maxwell Suk with more.
Our attention is not about the job creation, but creating decent jobs and job sustainability.
This is the fourth national policy summit to have been organized within 20 months of this government. The summit is meant to receive feedback from Ghanaians about what they think about the government flagship policies in Ghana. I got a chance to speak to Pius Enam Hazide, Deputy Information Minister.
This year's policy summit has sought to focus on our flagship programs. And you know, we have the flagship programs of stabilizing the economy, which is the first flagship program. Again, we have the free senior secondary education, the One District, One Factory.
This government came into power with a lot of promises on its manifesto. 20 months down the line, it has started implementing some of the projects. And Ghanaians like Agnes Ganda, who works with ISODEC in Tamale, a non-profit organization that promotes social justice and human rights in Ghana, thinks the government is rushing things.
Even babies in stomachs have realized the policies are good, but we cannot have them implemented effectively because of challenges. And he needs to listen to the voices.
Mohammed Awol is the director of NOSAC, a right-based NGO in Tamale. He also thinks the government is biting more than it can chew based on the limited resources at hand currently.
What is my concern is how we try to move with so many things with limited resources. It will be difficult for us to achieve. And if we do not take time and work on prioritization of these dreams that we have, we may end up not achieving a single thing comprehensively.
The government is narrowing down its expectations, especially with some of the projects. At the beginning, many Ghanaians wondered how the government would finance those projects. The One District, One Factory, for example, has been given to private investors who are creating the enabling environment. Paul Osei Kufuor is the team leader of Northern Ghana's Center for Democratic Development, CDD.
That's why we need to also occupy that space for conceptualization, for policy formulation, so that we continue to ask questions, we continue to make inputs, we continue to criticize, so that we get it right. Because at the end of the day, these projects are not going to benefit the politician alone, but it's we, the masses and the citizens, who are poor, we need it best. So we must get on board, criticize, and make sure we get it right.
So far, only 18 factories have been constructed. It is said that the government will spend up to 3.6 million Ghana cedis, about $900,000 yearly, to cater for the free secondary education alone.
Africa on the move.
So what would you do with a drone if you had one? How can you use a drone as a business or to help your business grow? That is what the South African-based organization African Drones is trying to teach across Africa.
Now, African Drones describes itself as a non-profit empowering civic drone pioneers across the African continent. They claim to give citizens powerful new ways to better understand their world and to improve public accountability. Well, to make sense of what they do, I caught up with the founder of the organization, Johnny Miller, who is on tour in Europe.
African Drone is an organization that's a nonprofit and that empowers African drone pilots, journalists, and anyone who's interested in using drones to see the world around them in a different way. So we say drones for good. So we've got partner pilots all over Africa. We've got main offices in Cape Town, Dar es Salaam, and Nairobi. And we've just got a great network that's growing all the time where we help people tell stories. We help people map. We help people get access to education and sometimes even get access to hardware like drones themselves.
From a young person's perspective in Africa, you wouldn't really understand what to do with a drone. If a young African does have a drone, why is it necessary to connect with African drones for the first place? And then secondly, what can this person do with this drone?
If you've got a drone or if you're thinking of getting a drone, it's a pretty serious piece of equipment. I mean, it's a big investment. So we're hoping that that person takes their investment seriously and that approaches us as a way to accelerate their business potential. So we want to empower business people just as much as we want to empower journalists and people using drones for nonprofit operations. For example, we empower a whole bunch of people in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, South Africa, who want to tell stories but also want to shoot weddings, who want to employ their friends and family, who want to use their drone to make money.
Are there serious legislation on flying drones in Africa?
Yeah, absolutely.
In what country specifically are you talking about?
Air law is different. Even in Europe, air law is different in every country. There's no European air law and there's no African air law. There's country by country specifics. So the country I live in, which is South Africa, has very strict and expensive regulations around how you can fly a drone. There's other countries like Tanzania, which makes it difficult to find the people who are in charge of allowing you to fly legally. But then once you identify those people, it's quite easy to get them to sign a piece of paper.
But is this related to official process? Say big businesses have flying their drones. What about a small individual, say someone who is just trying to shoot a music video to fly a drone around there, shoot that particular scene? What legal process do you need to go through in order to be able to do that?
Again, it depends what country you're in. But for example, in Kenya, it's not straightforward. It's quite tricky to be able to figure out how to fly legally. That doesn't matter if you're a big company or it doesn't matter if you have your own drone and you want to shoot a music video. The process is just as difficult for both. So what you'll see is a lot of people are just doing it anyways. No one's enforcing, basically.
To what level are we talking about the amount of drones across Africa, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, there's not as many as Europe or America. Commercially, I think there's something like 100,000 drones that have been sold in South Africa over the last 2 years.
In South Africa alone?
Now, that's a lot. That's a lot. But a lot of those are the very small toy, tiny drones. So I know there's only 25 companies in South Africa legally licensed to fly. And there's about 500 drone pilots legally licensed to fly. So that's not very big numbers. So it's an industry that's growing. And if you're interested in flying drones, I think it's definitely the right industry to get into. I mean, it's the future for sure. It teaches you amazing skills as far as not just piloting, but planning your missions and using a computer to process the imagery. All these sorts of skills that are important in a digital world, flying a drone will teach you.
Johnny Miller, founder of the African Drones. You can find more on what they do on their website, africandrones.org.
Now, Abu, drones, it sounds very interesting.
It is.
What would you do, actually, if you had a drone?
Before this interview, actually, I thought that, you know, you could just fly it around and just have fun flying things around. But at the end of the day, there are serious things that people really do with it. For example, he talked about Tanzania there, where they're really mapping out, like, you know, the Google Map thing, right? So it works like that. But the thing is, it gives you better quality image of than what Google Map does. And he has another project called Indifferences, basically, you know, showing communities where you see one end of community, you see like really rich people, rich houses with swimming pool in South Africa, and on the other half, you actually find out really, really poor.
But you're
people.
Not answering my question. I want to know what you would do if you had a drone.
Well, I would shoot videos.
Well, I think
reporting.
It's also a good business idea. You could
definitely,
you know, get
I think young African entrepreneurs should get into it.
Yeah, and I think they're also doing that.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Focus Europe.
The Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has been under fire for refusing a proposal to provide refuge to 50 Syrian orphans currently languishing in Greek refugee camps. Mr. Babiš has repeated that his country will not take a single refugee and said it would be better to help child victims of the war in their home countries.
36 senators from across the political spectrum have now sent open letters to him, urging him to allow the country to take in the orphans. Rob Cameron reports from Prague.
There's one story making headlines in the Czech Republic. A proposal to take in a small number of child refugees from Syria, many of whom have lost their parents, and the Prime Minister's ardent refusal to do so.
Poslanci o přijetí syrských sirotků podle jedněch humanitární gesto, podle jiných předvolební kampaň.
It all started with a proposal made back in May by Michaela Šojdrová, an MEP from the opposition Christian Democrats. She'd visited the refugee camps that have been set up on several Greek islands and was appalled by the conditions for children, including many orphans, from Syria.
Já myslím, že riziko je to, když se bojíme.
People say it's too risky to take them in, but I think what's risky is when we're afraid. When we're afraid of taking responsibility. Every person is a risk because we don't know what's going through their head. But we can raise these kids. We can care for these kids. I think it's nothing more than fear-mongering.
Michaela Šojdrová wants the Czech Republic to take in a symbolic number of them, just 50. But that seemingly modest proposal has caused a fierce backlash.
The problem is složitý.
A day after Michaela Šojdrová repeated her call at a special hearing in the Senate, the Prime Minister, Andrej Babiš, gave a lengthy newspaper interview in which he poured cold water on the idea. Mr. Babiš said there were plenty of Czech orphans who needed help, and foreign children should receive assistance in their home countries, something he said his government was already doing. And anyway, he wrote, most of these Syrian orphans were not defenceless toddlers, but boys in their mid to late teens. He repeated his pledge, now appearing on his party's campaign material ahead of local elections next month, that the Czech Republic would not take in a single refugee. In a subsequent Facebook post, he complained of his remarks being taken out of context, rejecting accusations of inhumanity and claiming Michaela Šojdrová was playing a cynical political game. That led to a minor storm on Czech Twitter, and the story hasn't gone away. Here he is speaking to journalists several days later.
Já jsem poskytl rozhovor jednému deníku.
I gave an interview to one particular newspaper, which created this brutal headline, which I found really disappointing as it was taken out of context. Because I'm convinced that our task is to help refugees in the countries where they were born and to where they want to return.
Some 50 Czech families have come forward to offer their homes to the orphaned refugees, and Michaela Šojdrová is due to meet Andrej Babiš to discuss the matter face to face. He's claimed credit for defeating the European Commission's plan to redistribute thousands of migrants in Italy and Greece fairly across the EU using a quota system, something fiercely opposed by the Visegrad group of Central European countries. They argued against the quota plan on principle. Any solidarity, they said, must be voluntary, not compulsory. This, says Michaela Šojdrová, is a chance to show they mean it.
Rob Cameron reporting from Prague.
Now, elsewhere in the news this week, in the Kenyan capital Nairobi, a Kenyan film called Rafiki is being shown, and it had previously been banned. Now, the film tells the story of a love affair between two young women, and it premiered at Cannes this year. And after its seven-day run in Kenya, it will be a contender for the Oscars. Now, the film was banned because it was seen to promote homosexuality, which is illegal in Kenya. So we asked the question on our Facebook page, should the film be shown or continue to be banned after this week?
Now, most of the comments are quite negative, I must put it. Maurice Ochien says it should even be deleted from YouTube's video. Not banned, but totally be illegalized. I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, and Colin Francis is saying, why can't the West learn from Africa the way it was in ancient times?
Thanks for all your responses. It's been a pleasure. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro.
DW. made for minds.